Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
I was literally listening to Artie Lang doing my jewelry, which is relaxing for me. And I was on every word. And it wasn't a structured bit where it was a joke. It was, oh shit, this guy's telling me the truth. Mm-hmm. I get to hear the truth. Fucking A. Because when I hear someone going like, what's with?
Yeah,
I'm like, what am I, stupid?
Yeah.
But now I'm like, a guy in a prosthetic pig mask driving down the PCH trying to get Coke at 8:30 in the morning? Yes!
Hello, welcome back to Shit They Don't Tell You. I'm Nikki Limo.
I'm Steve Green.
And today we have our special guest, Leslie Wolf, with us. She's a casting director, a comedian, an instructor of funny. Thank you for being here, Leslie.
It is my distinct pleasure.
Yeah.
Leslie, you don't remember me, but you taught me stand-up. You're my first stand-up teacher when I first moved to LA.
I do remember you, and I never forget an essence
of
stardom like you have.
Okay, true. True. I'll give you that.
That's good.
That's good. It could be a new cologne.
Yeah, that's really nice.
I love you too. I'll say real quickly, are we allowed to, do we have an endorsement deal?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I got the world's
endorsement deal for Pepsi, but go ahead with the Coke.
Yeah, okay. Please. It's fine.
World's biggest Diet Coke, which is like literally better than like happening upon a crack house for a crack addict, because at my place, my baby daddy will only let me have the mini ones, mm-mm, not a normal can even, but the mini ones, which is like a half a glass of Diet Coke, and that just
that's a
ain't
teaser.
Right.
And those are like $4. The deal is not there.
It's not cost effective.
That's exactly. Like letting someone touch one boob. It's like that's, so that's, true. That's, those days. That's sad.
When you can use
you
your
can touch
body
one.
As a monetization device.
I do that.
Yeah, you can.
Nikki's a great example for
I'm like,
everyone.
You clean the kitchen, you can see both.
That's right. That's true.
That's a good deal.
I will let you touch both.
It is true.
Leslie and I recently worked on a movie together, and I thought you were so funny in the scenes, especially when you were allowed to improv. I thought that like really showed off your comedic abilities, and I love it. And I had also, Steve said he took a class with you, and I had seen frequently, I used to go to casting director workshops at Act Now, and I would see your name on the list for stand-up, and I'm like, oh, I want to check it out. I never
did, but
it's
so funny that you mentioned Act Now, because I love Kenna Dean, and that's where this class originally started. It was like, find your 5-minute sitcom set, and it was all for just actors, and I loved it, because oddly enough, when it's all professional actors, they're really, really good.
Oh.
My class has evolved to it's anyone from anywhere can do it, and it's a different experience, but I really loved the Act Now days.
Right. Have you ever thought of doing like a specific actors workshop for like as a separate thing?
I really have been asked a lot of times, because right now when people are going in for commercials or anything like that, it's like imperative that they have stand-up in their arsenal. Right. So I highly recommend that every actor who calls themselves an actor should do stand-up at least once.
Definitely. I mean, the theater is an actor's medium. And so in LA, you don't really audition for theater as much as you do for film and TV and commercials. So,
yeah, if ever.
But yeah, but that's really where your craft gets to shine is on the stage. And I was never in theater, but stand-up I did for 7 years and I fucking loved it. There's nothing that's ever replaced that feeling.
There's really no feeling. And it's so funny because now that I'm a mom, you know, I brought my kid with me today,
yeah,
which
she's
is so
cute.
So sweet. You to let me leave her is that each time I'm going, I love my class and I love the huge showcase they have at the end. But every time it's like Sunday night, I'm exhausted. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this tonight. As soon as I get on stage and get that laughter, it is so addicting and it is so, oh yeah, this is why I do it. It's so much fun.
It fills you up. It like rejuvenates you. All that tiredness, you're like, I have so much energy now.
It totally. And it's a gift. I mean, you can't get that from many other things. I mean, it's fun if I'll do like a guest star or a movie and you could show your kid something on the screen.
Yeah.
Oh, there's mommy. But it's not that same feeling.
Yeah.
Even on set, I wanted to talk to you about that too. The whole just sitting around on set all day is so tedious
draining.
And tiring. Stand up, you can go out, you're in, you're out, you're done.
Yeah.
And it's not one or the other, but it's definitely something if you're stuck in this sort of guest star rut where you're sitting in your trailers 8 hours and performing for 1 minute.
Yes.
To get out there and have a little bit more power over what you're doing.
Yeah. What I really liked about stand up too is at the time when I started, I was 20 and
that's
I was
so young.
I know. I was a baby. And I was constantly as an actress getting sent out for like, you know, like one line hot girl at the bar role or like, you know, ditzy bimbo role. And that's fine, but it was so not me as a person. And stand up was like the one place where I could showcase like who I felt I was as an artist and like what I found funny and how I wanted to perform it without someone being like, could you make it more bubbly? Can you bring up the energy? Fucking hate those
notes. But like smile the whole time.
Yeah.
I love.
But and you're in like the perfect time right now for women, because when I started back in the day, there might be one or two women on the lineup, but it was a very male dominated world, blah, blah, blah. It's no longer that. Now it's 50-50. In fact, most of my classes are mostly women.
Right.
And women aren't feeling like they have to be like a ditzy, you know, blonde to get attention. They're really going against the cliches and really having really unique brands. And I think it's like the golden age for women comedy
right
now.
Awesome. I mean, even when I started in 2007, I was still almost always the only female, unless the headliner was female. But yeah, of the comics that were regularly opening, yeah, it was the same way. And I also felt like you really had to back then like desexualize yourself completely. So
or super sexualize yourself.
Yes.
So you had
yes.
to make a choice. You either had to be the sexy. I had a mentor named Jason Strauss, who I love so much. You might have seen him. He's a filmmaker now. He just did Teacher of the Year and a couple other things. And he would always be like, Leslie, get yourself sexy. Do this, do that. And it wasn't until I had a show at a club called 4th and B in San Diego. It was like in front of 2,000 people. And I wore like a green t-shirt and jeans and my hair back in a ponytail. And I killed. And afterwards, somebody came up to me and said this exact quote. And they said, you know why I like you? Because you're hot enough that the guys will watch you, but not too hot that the ladies will hate you.
That's exactly what it was. Yes.
And I just saw my mother-in-law come in and she's going to have to get on this mic before the end of the day because she is a Hollywood star. It took them 8 hours to find find this place.
It's LA. It's confusing here. We're in the valley. yeah, it was. It's very much like that. Like if you make the girls hate you, then you lose half the audience. And, you know, a lot of guys are bringing their dates and they don't want to feel like there's any sort of competition.
But I'm very much in the mindset, too, of as women, as men even, not even to be sexist and say just women, wear what you would wear on any given day. Don't be you every day and then all of a sudden you're going up to do stand-up and you're wearing a black cocktail dress. Like, it doesn't make any sense. My class especially is about making the audience feel like they're just at a coffee shop having a talk with you. Like, it's really casual. Like, oh, how'd this mic get here? This happens to be here. So to get all dolled up, unless you're like a cocktail waitress in Vegas, it makes no sense.
Or your marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Which, by the way, 874 people tell me to watch that every day. And I have some weird aversion when I watch it. And I wonder why, but that's a deeper psychological question.
No, that was the same
way. You wonder why, because you can't get into it.
I can't get into it.
No,
good for you.
It was exactly the same for me. But then recently I made myself watch it just because I wanted to just you know, be a student of what is popular right now. Why are people liking this? We recently made ourselves get into Game of Thrones for the same reason.
We never watched one episode in a year.
We hated it. We were so averse
to get into that shit.
Oh my God. It was horrible. But now we're addicted. But yes, it is true. Once you get past the first grueling.
I appreciate Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I see it as a drama more than a comedy.
Yeah, I really do.
I don't see it as a stand-up.
It's not
I see her as an evolution of empowerment of a woman,
yes,
which is terrific. But it's old school.
It's old school comedy because it's a period piece. So it's like 1950s comedy and humor. But it's more about the woman empowerment thing. And also, I think it's like everyone's trying to find purpose. Like every character in that show is trying to find purpose. They feel lost and confused. I think that's what's more relatable about it to me rather than the whole stand-up part of it. But
exactly.
I think when people hear stand-up and lady stand-up.
And Jewish and lady.
Yeah, you need to watch Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. So I was not.
Well, it took you 2 seasons to get into it, too.
It took me a season to get into it. And then the second season, I was like, oh, now I understand these people and what they want, and I want to see where their character
goes. But it's also the classic thing of, like, when you're a gynecologist, you don't want to come home and see a vagina. I'm teaching stand-up all day. I don't come home and watch stand-up on TV.
Right.
So
yeah,
true.
Exactly.
Although I can watch stand-up all day, of course.
So today's topic, I thought, would be perfectly fitting for you, which is how to become funny from scratch, because you teach these classes, and we do get asked a lot, like, through our email, the podcast email, like, how do I be funny? Like, I have a good sense of humor, but I don't know how to translate that into me being funny.
Well, my great question, first of all, my real philosophy on that topic is everybody who has a life is funny. And if you tell the truth, and the more that you tell the truth, the funny you are. And instead of trying to be funny, coming up with jokes, in a weird way, almost go towards the things in your life that bring you pain or bring things that you need to find the catharsis in, and that will find humor. Like, I'm not even joking. I'm an older mom. I've got a 4-year-old. She doesn't have school on Fridays. I'm driving around. I'm begging her grandparents who are in there, you know, getting older, 70s, 80s, to come meet me at the studio. I mean, if you were to watch what just went on before this show, that's an episode of
a sitcom.
And the funny thing is, we're so tunnel vision. We're like, what's funny? What's funny? What can I make? When it's always right under our nose. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like just meeting you guys. Of course, we met on the set and I was in love with you at first sight. And you were my student. And I remember
that
you
very well.
I really remember it. But the minute I look at you guys, I just see, obviously, you could see all the humor and all the guests that you have that come on and all the pressure you have as a couple to be successful. And then the behind the scenes would be all the crazy fights and the fun stuff that would go on. But someone might say to you, oh, any couple could do that. That sounds so cliche. No, each person, in my opinion, when they're doing their comedy, has to get so truthful and so unique that nobody else could come and steal their comedy and do it themselves. And what people really respond to that when they take my class, because if you were 20 years older, you and I could potentially go out for the same role in something. Like, you're not my direct competition right now for a role, but you want to be able to be so specific, unique, and memorable that you're going to beat out the 6 other people in your category. And I think that's what, you know, I've been in this business for so long, and for my money and for what I like, it's when you really feel like you're getting the inside scoop of someone's real life. You know, a lot of people do comedy under a persona, or you can tell they're doing other people's material. That's all fine, but I don't really get into it unless I'm in on a little secret. And that's why I don't want to get political, but like, I used to love Louis C.K. I used to love, you know, a lot of the edgier comics who would really tell the truth.
Right.
I think is what I prefer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree 100%. I think it wasn't until like realizing what, so I have anxiety and depression and stuff.
You
and
do?
Yes. And I think that I wrote my best. Oh, it's okay. But I think I wrote my best. That's how it started. Was I started doing stand-up because I was like, that was the outlet for
catharsis. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a really dark sense of humor, so it worked because it was like everything that I was feeling, I turned it into a joke, and it was great because it like lifted that darkness because
you're sharing it and you are getting, you know, we all know what shame is. The only reason shame remains shame is because it's secretive and held close. When you let it out, it's no longer shameful.
Yeah.
And more likely than not, whatever you're feeling, 6 to 7 to 20 people in the audience are feeling. And the minute you share it and the collective sigh of relief and catharsis that comes up, you're not only getting it off your chest, you're helping them get it off their chest. And it's an energetic thing that changes. And even like I just ran into Brittany Ferland, who I love so much. She's a huge internet sensation and star. We were chatting about depression and anxiety. And it doesn't only pick certain people. I think everybody experiences it. And when you take the shame away from it, that's when the humor comes. And I'm a very, I don't encourage people to be self-deprecating, but myself, I'm extremely self-deprecating in my humor and when I'm teaching. And I think that really comforts people and allows people to be imperfect. Because when you're, you know, when you're like, you can't sit there and be like, be funny. I mean, that's too much pressure. and sometimes people are the funniest when they've pretty much given up.
Yeah.
Like I had one student named Kosha Patel who I love. I think she actually was a series regular on a pilot this year. She took my class. She was like my favorite. She's a beautiful Indian actress. And she's like, Les, love you, but I'm not going to do the show. I'm just not ready. I have a wedding to go to this weekend. I'm so stressed out. And I said, great. Go to the wedding. Write down a couple things. Let me know how it goes. She came back and killed with a whole set about the wedding and about how insecure she felt about being single, not this at the wedding. And the minute you give permission to not do it is when people enjoy themselves. Because we're so hard on ourselves and we're so comparing with each other.
Yeah.
Yes. Especially as women. Mm-hmm. You know, I think men do compare to each other too. But I love that you did that. I love that you used comedy as catharsis and therapy to get through your stuff. Because then when you hear people laughing, it loses its weight and seriousness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you helped me a lot with that where I remember coming into your class and just coming in with a bunch of bits, you know?
But you're naturally funny. Not to be funny for a second.
Oh.
Of course, if I have a group of 15 people, not everyone's going to be funny. There are certain people that walk in and you get it. Mm-hmm. You get the timing. Nice.
But I remember I was like, yeah, I got all these bits and shit. I can't wait to do all these bits. And then you were like, listen, those are great and all. You're being very nice about it. But you're like, just tell me something about you. And that's when I was able to get closer to the material where you didn't realize that you're far away from your own stuff when you come up with these prepared jokes and stuff.
But it's also a defense mechanism. There's someone I actually want you to meet because I think you guys could probably do a funny web series together. His name is Kyle Moore. Do you know him?
I don't.
Okay. He was just in my class. He's so good. He's actually a seasoned actor and has a Chris Farley energy kind of vibe. But he came in with all this prepared stuff and I said to him, Micah, do me a favor. Just respectfully put that aside and try to write new material. And he's a dad of a six-year-old, which you'd never think because he's all like rustled up. He did this whole bit about trying to get in with the mom group at the kids' school, and it was the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard. And he wrote me such a heartfelt note saying, thank you so much for encouraging me to tell the truth because it's funnier. Yeah. And I think there was another student I had, Jake, in this session who actually is going to take it again in August because he didn't end up doing it. And he was just so aware. He's like, I'm relying on my poop jokes. I'm relying on my jokes. I don't want to do it. And I said, here's the deal. If that's your identity, if that's your brand, if you're the cute Jewish guy who does the poop jokes, commit to it and do it. Or respectfully put it aside and really get to know, because he's naturally funny. But any shtick is a crutch. And there are very famous comedians out there who are making money who are still on one shtick that's not even their authentic personality. And it can make money. It's okay. It could be profitable. But for the personal growth and individual satisfaction of doing it, if you can let go of the bits and really tell the truth, you'll be happier. But bits work for people too.
See, they deal with that on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
Because that big star comedian.
Oh my
comedian,
God, Nikki, we'll watch it, okay? Jesus.
She's like, she hates her life because she makes her money from this like crutch of like this shtick that she has of being this completely different character, this character from Queens. Yeah. And she puts on this accent and stuff, but she's never been to Queens.
Yeah.
And like when the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel meets her, it's like she's in this opulent like mansion and she's not this scrubby person. She puts on a fat suit to do her stand-up.
Well, that is such a
trope?
The parallel, because it is such an Ozzian, Wizard of Ozzian letdown when you see somebody and you see that their authenticity is fake. They're inauthentic. I almost say we should invite Elizabeth Gordon here because she loves Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She'd probably want to talk about it for hours. We can if you want. She's right out there. But she'd be thrilled. She's hilarious. That's my pet peeve. I'm not going to name any names, but my real pet peeve is when somebody goes up there trying to be like somebody else or something else. I understand homage. I understand I love Sarah Silverman. I want to be like Sarah Silverman or I love X, Y, or Z. But when somebody goes up and tries to mimic or be like that person, it is my biggest pet peeve.
Yeah,
absolutely. I agree. So what would you say for people that have never done anything like this before? Like where do you have them start? Is it just learning themselves?
That's a great question. You want to come be my teacher's assistant?
Yeah.
I start with people doing what I call a personal inventory, okay? So there's certain topics in our lives. Hey, if I give out these tricks, who's going to take my class? Just kidding. There's certain.
Take your class.
There's certain.
Or buy tickets.
you're so cute. Things in your life that you don't even think about. Like, it's so funny. I'll tell you, I was with my daughter Abigail this morning at the dentist, and she's laying there getting her teeth cleaned. And all of a sudden, I had this out-of-body experience. I'm like, I made that human being laying there. Like, we're so rushing from thing to next. We don't even think about things. So I have people sit down with a notebook and do a personal inventory. They have to talk about their job history, their education, their hopes and dreams, their biggest fears. I have them write down about what they call their spin cycle, meaning everybody has a different one. For some people, all day long, what do you think about all day long? Oh, I have to lose weight. I have to lose weight. Oh, I got to get a job. Oh, I need to get married. Oh, I need to have kids. Of course, you can have several. But what's the one thing that keeps coming back? Ultimately, that's going to be the first thing I'm going to have you start on. So if somebody's really desperate to have a relationship, I'd have them talk about their relationship journey. If someone's really desperate to lose weight or to do something like that, I would talk about their eating habits or what, or you know, as the brainstorming exercise to get them going, not as their set. And once they do that personal inventory, the fear of writing goes away, because a lot of people initially are afraid to even put that pen on paper and start writing.
Oh.
And I really do encourage people to use an old school pen and paper rather than a computer, because you just want to do stream of consciousness. There's a great book called Writing Down the Bones. I believe the author is Goldberg, who says, you know, just don't let that pen stop. Even if you get frustrated, even if you get hungry for dinner, just write. Oh, shit, I just thought of dinner. I need fried chicken. Back to where you're going. Because we are our own worst critics, and we self-edit to such a degree that the best gems could be lost because you're so worried about doing it right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. A lot of people are like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They wait for perfect instead of just going with what they got.
To be honest, that's the biggest obstacle I've seen in my students is perfection.
Yeah, that makes sense. And actually, in The Artist's Way, that book, that was like their first exercise that they have all the people that read it do, is that you have to do morning pages, which is you write 3 pages a day, and you just aren't allowed to stop moving the pen. It just has to go completely for 3 pages. And I tried doing that for quite a few months, and I did realize that it frees up mental space for me, where
chatter.
Normally, yeah, exactly. You have all this chatter in your head, and it stops you from being able to like listen and observe the world, because you have all this your head's too full.
And it takes away your power. And that brings us to the next thing I do, which is have people practice something called active listening. Whether we're in LA or anywhere else, we're not listening to each other. We're waiting for the other person's mouth to stop talking so we could say what we want to say. And people have a really hard time. And we're all now addicted to our devices and instant gratification, myself included, no doubt. And just to be able to listen to somebody else and to constructively and altruistically help the other person versus focus on yourself is crucial to comedy. And you might think to yourself, why does it matter if I listen to somebody else? Comedy is a solo performance. I do not agree. I think it is a group sport, stand-up comedy. You should create your little groups of people that you workshop with. A crucial part of my class is that in between classes, people must workshop with each other without me. And between you and me, since nobody's listening,
uh-oh.
People in the class are as much, if not more, of a teacher to each other than I am. I'm just a facilitator for them to carve out time for themselves.
Right. I think that's a huge thing, too, is that people don't carve out time for themselves to actually do it.
100%. And it's self-sabotage, myself included, too. Mm-hmm. Because what a great feeling when you sit down with a cup of coffee or a drink, whatever your drink of choice is, a little margarita, and give yourself a moment to write. There is a freeing feeling of self-love there,
mm-hmm.
because we don't pay attention to ourselves, because we figure, oh, if I don't pay attention, then nobody else will, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it does take a lot of self-esteem to do stand-up and to say, oh, I'm worth, you know, people, whatever I have to say is worth listening to. But my biggest pet peeve, even though I've said that 3 times already, is when people say, oh, that person's not funny. Anybody's funny.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And what was I just going to say? It had to do with, well, it doesn't matter. We'll come back to it.
Okay.
what would you say like makes a really good bit? I know you talked about the truth. What makes a good bit?
Well, the funny thing is, I do not like classic joke structure where you're bringing the audience down one way and then it's that way. So I can smell that a mile away, and different teachers in town might teach that way of doing it. To me, a great bit is honest, truthful moments where you're actually living in the moment, which is to say, being a stand-up, you must integrate acting into it, because while you're just having a conversation, the people watching want to feel you experiencing the embarrassment, experiencing the pain, experiencing the fear. And I was just, I don't even know why. I was up so early today, and somehow on my computer, there was on YouTube or something, I didn't look it up, but an Artie Lang bit about him while he was on Mad TV dressed in prosthetics to be a pig, was so in need of some coke that he had to go to like Duke's in Malibu at 8 o'clock in the morning, dressed like a pig to get the coke. And I was riveted on every, I think I was like, I'll tell you, I'm a hot mess, but I'll tell you what's something funny. I like to make jewelry because it is calming to me too.
Oh, I make jewelry. Is it wire? Yeah. Did you wire wrapping? Or
I do all sorts of things. And I'll tell you all about that. But so I was literally listening to Artie Lang doing my jewelry, which is relaxing for me. And I was on every word, and it wasn't a structured bit where it was a joke. It was, oh shit, this guy's telling me the truth. Mm-hmm. I get to hear the truth. Fucking A. Because when I hear someone going like, what's with me?
Yeah,
I'm like, what am I, stupid?
Yeah.
But now I'm like, a guy in a prosthetic pig mask driving down the PCH trying to get coke at 8:30 in the morning? Yes. It's new. It's real. I couldn't steal that bit and do it. There's no way I would have ever been in that situation. And so, you know, there's so many different ways of comedy. I love Nick Swardson too. You can watch him.
Yeah.
He could talk about anything and you're on board. For me, what I respond to is literally authenticity and people telling the truth. The minute I feel like they're putting on some sort of act.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Absolutely.
That's why I hear. So I just got on dating apps and I'm like, oh God, I got to leave. I have to get out of here.
For sure.
It's funny that you bring that up too, because if there are hackneyed and cliche topics like dating apps or, hey, I was at the manicurist and they were talking about me or whatever it is, I'll say, or I'm going to help the homeless people by redoing their signs. I'm going to say, listen, I've heard that 10,000 times. I'm not going to let you do that. I create a safe space in my class, but I'm not going to let someone think that they're the most innovative first person ever saying the same thing I've heard 300 times. Like, it's
you should
not-
get on all the new apps with that shit, because I swear half of Instagram videos is just people recycling old prior jokes and
all
kinds of old stand-up comedy
Instagram
jokes.
Instagram and Vine were like, this new quick comedy stuff.
White people are like this. It's like, man, guys, this shit is old. You don't even know it. But they think they're innovating
it. No, because there's a new generation of audience that's never seen it before.
Exactly.
That they're like, oh, this person invented it.
And I always feel, I'll say this, of course, everybody's different. I'll love a Mitch Hedberg set as much as a Zach Galifianakis set, as much as a Natasha Leggero, whoever you're watching. There's not one way to do comedy. But if it's too observational and unoriginal, it's a deadly combination. Like, if you're going to be observational, be Lewis Black, be so smart and, you know, Garrison Keillor, whoever you want to say, who's somebody who, you know, thinks about the world like that. You can't be like, why do chicks want the guy to pay for the bill? Like, it's like, no, I can't. Like, no more. You have to find something that is authentically you. And sometimes I'm never inauthentic with my students. I always tell them like it is, and I can be toughish.
That's
a good teacher.
It's great.
And because they won't have the experience. If they get up there, they might get the laughs, but they won't have the growth.
And you'll harm them if you just say, okay, that's fine.
And they won't know why it was funny or why it doesn't work the next time they try to do it in a harder crowd, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started, I was doing I was going through a breakup, so I wrote a lot about that.
Hey, there was no memo for him.
No, not at all.
That's how I feel.
How dare you?
And then I talked about fucking in bathrooms. I'm just kidding. Never did that more than 10 times. I was writing a lot about that, and it was kind of like the material was based off that. And then I healed from that breakup because of stand-up. But then writing new material, it was like, oh no, where do I go now?
Also, when you're so happy, it's hard to find the comedy. And that's what people talk about all the time. When I was single, before I had my kids,
when I was depressed.
Yeah, my log line, I encourage people to find their log line, what they never say it, but was the Ivy League loser. I could get handed everything on a silver platter and still fail. And to the point where I almost developed it into a TV show with Amber Thiessen, and of course it didn't go because it had to stay on brand. But then once I found my love, their son, and had my baby, I'm no longer the Ivy League loser because I kind of got everything I wanted, and I kind of have this lost my brand. And that's okay. You reinvent your brand. And even some of your famous comedians have gone through a million different incarnations. You look at Kevin Hart. He's changed once he got married. He changed once he got famous. And Chris Rock and other people who have gone from being in the struggle of it all, the mire, the quagmire, to being super successful, they have to change. They have to change their bits.
So for me, it was a hard time finding that. And I also have a theory about that whole, when you're depressed, you create your best work, because I used to believe that, but I'll get to that. But Steve actually points out quite a few of my things that I don't think of as being funny bits or anything, because they're just real things that I'm stressing about. Like you were saying earlier, And I just randomly like, we'll talk about things like how when I was six, I thought I was black and it was Martin Luther King Day. And like, we learned about, I grew up in Santa Barbara. So I was like one of the darkest people at my school. And I really thought like I was going to get assassinated. It was just a whole thing. It was very innocent. It wasn't political at all. It was just like very innocent. I was the darkest kid in my school. And I thought that, I thought I was black.
But if you were in my class, I would start there with you and I'd go, if this, then what? If you thought you were black, where else did this manifest? Did it manifest in the supermarket? Did it manifest in your dating life? Did it manifest with your family? And I think that's hilarious. And I also do, I was on Film Nerds podcast and we got talking about race too. I'm often talking about race and stuff because I've always been a pioneer and fighter for black comics. Why? I don't know, because I'm a Jewish white girl. But I created a show called Hell Date that put a lot of black comics on the map. And I took a lot of pride in that. But the funny thing is, if it's real,
yeah,
it will be funny. And anything about race is funny. Meaning, I encourage any student I have to exploit their race, whatever it may be, because it's a commonality. Any other Indian girl who might have that same feeling, any other Pakistani person, any other Muslim person, any other black, white, Jewish, whatever your ethnic diversity is, don't shy away from it. Go towards it. I think I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that what you just shared with me. And it's funny because when you share something like that, it makes someone in the audience think of something in their life where they felt like they were black, or they felt literally when I'm looking for Abby's, you're gonna love this, her public school. I'm going, of course, driving myself crazy, trying to do everything perfect because I'm a perfectionist too. And we go into the school. It's like 99% ethnic. They invite me to go into the Martin Luther King, I shouldn't be hitting this, Martin Luther King assembly. I'm standing, they're singing Lean on Me. I'm standing in the back, literally tears streaming down my face, like hating myself for my white privilege desire to put her into a school where there was more than one white kid. And it was so fucking funny. If it was a scene in a movie, just the craziness of this mom trying to get it right.
Yeah.
And what you just said made me think of that situation in my life. So it doesn't have to be a direct parallel, but I love that. You should work on that.
Relatable. Yeah. Well, that was one of the first things where someone was like, why don't you write about those kind of things, like that, yes, that those stories. And then Steve always points out just shit I do around the house that I like, I don't even think about. And he has a whole, we're now writing a series called Sitcom Wife, where because I just do like I had a pet grasshopper because she followed me and then like we became friends and she
and
laid
it's all real. So it's like,
well, I think couples, and this is great, I think couples is the best way to point out the humor in each other. Yeah. And in fact, I'm inviting you right now, mark your words, I'm going to do a night of comedy with all couples because me and my partner, who goes under a stage name, Jonathan Hayes, who, by the way, the Voyage LA, who I want to recommend you guys do, just did an article and he wanted me to call him Jonathan Hayes, even though that's not his name in the article. It was so funny. You don't see you're funny until your partner reflects it onto you. You're only the funniest with your most intimate partner. And that is, oh my God, the humor and the comedy that comes from putting a mirror up to your ridiculousness as a partner. I think I can't wait to see your guys' show, but you guys have to come to the Improv and do our night.
Yeah.
Because I think it's all about brand, right? Mm-hmm. We all think we're one thing, and I teach this in class a lot, but how we are perceived oftentimes is much completely different than who different. We think we are.
Yes.
And I know you've mentioned this a couple of times, so I'm assuming the fact that you're sexy and a beauty and stuff, you don't want to be pigeonholed as that, and you want to sort of lampoon your ridiculousness or any depression and stuff so that it can balance that out. And I find that to be as much as a struggle as someone who doesn't feel good enough or pretty enough. So it's like, there's no winning.
Totally. And once you find ways to change, like, for example, in high school, I was like the fat goth kid. And I dated a guy who told me all of my flaws when he broke up with me. He told me I wasn't girly enough. Told me I wasn't pretty, wasn't girly enough, had to lose weight, like all this stuff. So then I did all that, and then everyone pigeonholed me into this other new category that I had no business being in, and I was like, I don't know who I am. Like,
it's funny that you said that, because when I was just observing on set, when we were all on set, who am I looking at the audience? She played one of these gorgeous, one of three hot bridesmaids.
Thank you.
But you were so open and easy to communicate with and no attitude. Like, I felt, you made me feel safe on set, and I was like, girl, I got her right there. So I think people who get to know you after like 5 minutes will get your brand.
Good.
You, every woman, every man. But it's up to you for this career or for if you want to be acting to slam it down people's throat because nobody's creative enough to figure it out.
Fucking absolutely. Exactly.
Well, plus you're a casting director. Yeah, yes. Casting what would you director. Cast her as? You know what I'm saying? Right, like right. That's
actually,
kind of
I would
thing.
To be honest, even though you're young, I see you as the cool mom, like the mom that everybody.
That's what I want to be.
That's yeah. Well, that's what you're just a couple years away. No, because I see you almost like you're not the same type as American Mom, that woman, but I love that woman. She used to play the sister on Molly. Mike and Molly.
Oh, Mike and Molly,
oh
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not her same look, but your same feeling of, oh my gosh, I want to be best friends with that person. Yay. So that's the vibe you give me. You don't come off as intimidating.
Do you want to marry me?
Why not? I'm single. Just kidding. I've got my done with this my dude.
And
daddy.
What about my vibe, Leslie? Am I pretty cool too?
No, you are best friend, a buddy, but
you're
you can
like
also be a leading
dad.
Man,
like
but
that.
You know what?
Leading,
you're
leading.
No, hey, listen, don't tell your wife, but you have sex appeal, but you're very funny. You're instantly funny.
Don't tell them that.
You're like Bill Hader vibe. Like, I would give you that category.
Ooh, that's
like,
a
you could be
brand.
Barry.
Yeah.
That's tight.
Do you watch Barry? Branding.
Yeah, we
do. I love
yeah.
Barry.
It's amazing.
It's, dude, the pitch for Barry is one of the best pitches I've ever heard
but
for anything.
But the acting and the actual follow through, that's one show
Henry
that I can
Winkler
watch.
Henry Winkler stole.
Oh, my God.
He's amazing.
I'm like, wow.
Yes.
When you're watching Henry Winkler, you're like, I've met this guy so many times in this town. It's incredible.
The cliches are so on point. Even the lead actress with her jealousy and everything. It's so apropos. If people can just embrace the cliches and get it,
yeah.
They take all the pressure off having to actually
avoid
what are we
them.
All fighting for?
Right.
Like, that's
yes.
The joke. Like,
exactly.
I mean, we all want money. We all want the house on the hill. Of course, financially, everybody would like to be happy and
I
successful.
Actually don't want to live in the hills. It's such a pain in the ass to park.
I agree. I'm not kidding. You think I'm joking?
No, I'm not kidding.
I go to my rich friends in the hill driving back down to Ventura Boulevard. I'm like, who's got time?
If you host a party in the hills, you're such a dick, dude. Because we all got to park up there. And I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? I don't want to do this shit.
You think
give me a voucher for Uber.
If you were my therapist, you'd say, Leslie, you might be justifying it, but I'd much rather, I'm not kidding. Much rather live in a little two-bedroom apartment where I could jet around and do everything than be up in some isolated
well, let's not go
pal.
Crazy. I don't want to live in no two-bedroom. Let's not go absolutely not.
Let's not live with
that
the
good
peasants.
Thing I just married
yeah,
your wife.
Yeah.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this. When you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, we're taking a break from ourselves to have ourselves talk about ourselves. So thanks for listening to our podcast.
We really hope that you like, favorite, and subscribe. But most importantly, you give us 5 stars on the podcast app that you are on.
And give us a cool review if you like it, because we like you and we hope you like
it. But even if you don't, just give us 5 stars anyway, because we need
it. You sound so desperate.
No, listen, we really need it.
You sound so
desperate. Look, it's a tough time out there for podcasters.
Please help my husband. He's very sad.
If we don't get 5 stars, dude, you don't even know what's going to come down on me, man.
I
owe money. Listen, okay. I'm in deep, dude. I gamble.
Okay, no. We're done.
I need to win.
Thank you for listening. We hope you like this. We really appreciate your ears listening to this.
I'm going back to the table tonight. I'm going to get it.
Yeah,
back.
No, you're not.
No, I'm going to get it back.
Not. Okay.
I swear.
That's enough. Enough out of you. And we're back.
Welcome back. Real quick, I just want to plug my movie Funny Story out now on iTunes.
I can't wait to see it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's out right now. So you can get on iTunes and get on Apple TV or whatever device you got. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Nikki's in it.
I mean, it came out 8 weeks ago.
But, oh right, because we're stockpiled. Yeah. Well, whatever.
But you can still go and download it.
Technically, it's out today, but
you can still go and download it.
True.
Go watch it.
Oh, can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't involve their spouses or loved ones in creative projects. Do you guys love including each other in stuff?
We love it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We work together on like almost everything.
Yeah.
And I have heard that a lot. I've had a lot of. Older couples that were like, we tried to go in business together and never do it, and you'll hate each other. It's only made us like each other more.
Yeah. I think it causes more problem if you don't give your partner an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and we have different strengths and weaknesses, so we balance each other pretty well. So, like, Steve is a screenwriter. He writes a lot. I write, but I don't screenwrite. I act more than I write. He also acts, but he writes more than he acts.
Yep.
So it balances out that way. We both host things, but we have different hosting styles. Like you said, like you find your own brand and style. So there's very distinct qualities that would separate us from each other, where we'd never feel like there's any sort of competition or anything
never,
like that.
Never.
And we also just
I want
like
her to win, and she wants me to win. So.
Yes, that's the best partnership, unlike these guys.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. Well, don't get us wrong. We're really competitive, and we'll slaughter each other if that's the game that we're playing.
Right.
But
right. But at the end of the day,
each
success makes the other person happy, and that's
absolutely
the only way to survive.
Yes, and it just makes your relationship even better. So we talked about some hacky things like hacky material, dating. I feel like guys always go for masturbation. Girls always go for dating and tampon stuff. but are there any other pitfalls that you see like amateur comedians fall in and what to avoid?
My one thing that we kind of, stopped on this for a second, is the comparison comedy. Black people versus white people, men versus women. You know, if I was a cat or if I was a dog. Like, any time where you're polarizing anything, I think it can get into cliche town.
Yeah, for
totally.
Sure.
And also from, like, Elizabeth said, anything too dark or gross or poop or intentionally shocking, I'm not into.
Yeah. And I always felt like, I think the worst thing for me is like, don't feel like you have to be the funny one all the time, you know?
Yes.
Cause sometimes I feel like when you first start doing comedy and you're like, I'm a comedian or I'm a stand-up, people are like, why aren't you funny? Well, why aren't you being funny? And then you feel this pressure to have to be funny all the time. And that, I think, leads to hack material and bits and like being prepared to say funny things all the time. And I would say don't do that.
I agree, but I will say one thing which you might either take or leave.
Yeah.
I do believe high energy and quickness will get you better results than extreme slowness, because there are few people who can manage it and who could do so great doing it. But I just saw, I don't know if I should say the name, a couple comedy specials on Netflix where they're going so slowly that it's unbearable. Even people that I adore, somehow they came up with this concept like, let me go so slow to make the audience kind of wait to draw it out. It does not work.
So you're talking like baseline, like higher energy works better than low energy,
but not even personality wise. If you're a bitch, be bitchier. If you're nice, be nicer. Meaning, meaning, you know, Johnny Carson, who was one of the greatest talk show, you know, hosts of all time, was like, if it's colder, it's funnier. Not to be that crass of saying that easy, but If you're trying to keep people's energy, a crowd or even one person, after a long day, you have to have a heightened energy more than theirs. Like, and I will say, you can be mellow. Like, I love Amy Schumer. She's very chill and very vibe. I love certain people. But then there's, like, I love Tig Notaro. She's a very slow going, and but her energy is high.
For sure.
So, like, I think I just saw Anthony Jeselnik's special, and I love him so, so much. But he must have been coached to go so, so slow. And I was like, pulling my hair out, even though he's brilliant and I love him. And, you know, it's not about slow or fast. It's just about pacing. That's so funny. I just negated myself, but I'm saying like Gary Goldman, I love him so much. He goes slow, but you have to up the energy from your audience. The audience can't have more energy than you.
Totally. Oh, you're talking more about performance. I'm talking more about in life.
Oh, in life. So yes, the funniest people are not the class clowns or the people that are funny at the party.
Right, yeah. Right. And I think people misconstrue that because I remember just so many like frat boys when I was like in college age. I didn't actually go to the college. I worked at the Chili's next to the college. But
that's funny.
Yeah. All the coworkers were college guys.
Yeah.
And there'd be like the funny frat guy who's so fucking funny. And and then like people were like, you should do stand up. And I'm like, that guy's going to fail at stand-up, and then he did, because
well, some of my dearest friends who are so situationally funny when they're the funniest one at the party, they do not want to do stand-up because they run the risk of not getting the same reception that they normally get.
Yeah.
And it is two different muscles.
It's completely different.
Yes. Yeah.
And so for people that are listening, that maybe if you don't want to be a stand-up but you're just trying to like be more funny in normal life, I'd say listening and being able, I think that's how you build quick wit, is by listening to what's going on around you
and
being able to play off of that moment instead of being like, oh, I'm a funny guy with funny things to say, you know, like I'm funny all the time and I'm super wacky and high energy. It's like, no, you need to take it down a notch.
It's so funny. I just think everybody's so different. I think I do genuinely believe everyone should try stand-up. I mean,
yeah,
whatever you are. And it's so funny. Why I love my classes. I had given a scholarship. There was a girl who lived on Skid Row, and they made a post in the actors group. Does anybody know of an acting class that would be willing to donate a class to this girl? And I said, well, I don't teach an acting class. I teach a stand-up class, but I'm happy to give her a spot in the class. She was so beautiful, so funny, so hilarious, talking about the reason she lives at their women's shelters because she saw it on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I mean, like, hilarious stuff. It's her growth through the class of self-confidence and everything, it elevated her to so much. I believe every single person should try stand-up because all stand-up is self-exploration, yeah, self-inventory. Yeah. That's all it is.
Thank you so much for coming on our show today, Leslie and Elizabeth and all of the family.
Yes. Yes. We tried.
That's going to be good.
And we just do a thing at the end of the show called Final Thoughts, where we just say like our last final thought about the topic, which is being funny from scratch.
Tell the truth and dive deep.
Yes.
Go for the stuff that you would be normally too afraid to talk about, what they call be as self-disclosive as possible. Go for the stuff that you wouldn't normally share.
Yeah, like if it feels scary and you're like, I don't want to do it, and your whole body's like, let's not do this, go do it.
Correct.
Yes.
I say carry a big bag of props with you wherever you go and just be ready to go with those props, and people really, really enjoy that.
I say get good at listening, because even if you have a killer set that you love, like, you know, gets laughs and stuff, it doesn't necessarily work the same way for every single crowd. So the better you can hone your listening skills, the more that you can learn how to deliver and get your timing right depending on who you're talking to. And I think listening's probably the one thing that people forget about. Mm-hmm. Like, they just think it's not that important, but it's really important. And so if you want to be
that
funny,
being said, stand-up really is a conversation between you and the audience.
Yes, yes. And when you listen, I feel like you catch more of the things about yourself, all of your truths, the truths about the world, things, all those observational things, you catch more of that when you really hone your listening skills. So do that. Also, Leslie, where can they find you?
They can hit me up on my Insta, which is Leslie Wolf is the photo bomb. Or they can email me at LeslieWolf@gmail.com. I also have a page on the Hollywood Improv page. I have a show coming up June 30th and one July 14th. I don't know when this is airing, but nice. If anybody wants free tickets who listens today, they can come to the show.
Yes, go awesome. Email Leslie. Also, how do they sign up for one of your classes?
They just email me and they sign up. I've, you know, it's funny. I've never advertised. Usually the class is just full impact from every showcase.
Wow.
People see it and then they want to do it.
Word of mouth, that's, man.
Awesome.
That's where I heard of
you. I really love that.
Thanks.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I love being with you guys today. It was
you
so
too.
Fun. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you so much. That's all I try to do. It's a good job. Well, if you have a topic that you would like us to talk about, you could email us podcast@nikki.limo. I must have gotten your Gmail mixed in there.
Exactly.
But yeah, podcast@nikki.limo. Find us on Instagram, Should They Don't Tell You, and on Twitter, where Should They Don't. And we're on YouTube.
Angel Fire. And we'll see you guys later.
Bye.
Thank you.
Why didn't anyone tell me?
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.